First, we'll stick with the biggest news in the U.S. right now, Tuesday's general election. Not about the results or candidates themselves. We're going to take a look at misinformation and falsehoods that have been spread following the close of the election. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing a lot of misinformation or sketchy claims since Election Day? What questions do you have about how to spot these kind of things? How would you like this misinformation to be handled now and in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Howard Hardy is the Elections Integrity Reporter at Wisconsin Watch. Howard, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Margo Suska is Assistant Professor of Journalism at American University in Washington, D.C. She's also an assessor for Poynter's International Fact Check Network. Margo, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Margo, before we get into some specific claims out there, I wanted to ask you, in general, what are good ways for people in the media to talk about and report on false claims without risking spreading those false claims while they're doing it?
Well, I mean, I think that's an excellent question. And it's interesting today when you were seeing some of the media coverage, well, last night and today, some of the media coverage of Donald Trump's press conference, where you had actual news outlets turn off the live feed because what he was saying was filled with lies. We saw that word today, lies. And it's been very rare where you've seen news organizations that have actually pointed out what this administration has done actually being a lie. And it's interesting to me, after 4 years, we're finally seeing the news media doing, I think, what it should have been doing all along, which was calling out blatant falsehoods from this administration. And I think it's very, you know, it's the language that gets used. It's the way the stories are framed. And, you know, our citizens deserve the truth, and they deserve a media system that's going to hold this government and any government accountable.
Now, Howard, you've been following misinformation in Wisconsin in the run-up to the election as it's going on. Are we seeing a big burst of false claims spreading around now that the polls have closed this week?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there were all sorts of bogus rumors floating around, particularly on Wednesday morning. But the big one that really took off was that Wisconsin's voter turnout exceeded the number of registered voters in the state, which is false on its face and easily refuted by checking the Wisconsin Election Commission's website. Disinformation like this is really alarming when it presents an obvious harm to the public. And this particular tweet, like so many of the social media posts and kind of faux news stories that we've seen over the past few days, was attempting to undermine the confidence of the vote in a swing state with a razor-thin margin. So the stakes are obviously really high. That's why Wisconsin Watch decided to pull the trigger on publishing a debunk-style story. The content contained demonstrably false information, was created with malicious intent, and had many thousands of eyes on it in a matter of minutes. So it's like kind of a rare, easy call for us.
And Howard, let's talk about that one a little more, and I think this is a common theme in these stories where, you know, each state does their elections a little differently. And when you present something about a state's election for people who are unfamiliar with it, it can sound plausible, even though it's not. Talk about the aspects of Wisconsin's, you know, same day voter registration and that sort of thing that that debunk that claim.
Yeah, well, I've noticed a couple of recurring elements in the disinfo we've seen over the past few days with regard to the election that are, you could say, are kind of specific to Wisconsin. One big one was that ballots were, quote unquote, dumped at counting centers overnight. In Wisconsin, at least, those early and absentee ballots have been sitting there for days and weeks because, of course, poll workers couldn't start counting them until Election Day under state law. We always knew there was going to be a delay in counting, and the results of the election might depend on who cast their ballots by mail. So to characterize counting them as a dump is misleading, to say the least.
Margo, have you seen 2020 being different than 2016 when we talked to you about misinformation also? Does it look different? Does it spread differently than it did 4 years ago?
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about that the last time I was on talking about misinformation with you guys. It was to talk about the most widely shared article before the 2016 presidential election was an alleged affair between Hillary Clinton and Yoko Ono. I think many of us could laugh that off and we could see just the absurdity of it. Now, what we've seen 4 years later is that the tone of this misinformation has shifted dramatically, and now we're seeing it coming from the top position in office here. Donald Trump claiming victory on Wednesday in several battleground states. Eric Trump tweeting that his father won Pennsylvania. I mean, this isn't just misinformation. It's an outright lie.
We're talking about misinformation post-election as votes are still being counted. We're talking to Margo Suska from American University, assistant professor of journalism there, and Howard Hardy, elections integrity reporter at Wisconsin Watch. He's been writing about false claims, misleading stories going on. Howard, I want to look at one from before the election, because it's an example, I think, of a common type of story. And this one, I think, was more popular on the left. A picture of abandoned mailboxes attached to real concerns, I think, about changes at the U.S. Postal Service. But the captioning of the picture suggested, hey, look, the Postal Service is getting rid of all these mailboxes just in time for Election Day. It was misleading, though. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, that has become like the classic example of visual disinformation related to mail carriers and USPS in Wisconsin as related to the election. It was a photo that was presented out of context, which is super, super common. We'll often see that tactic where a photo is presented without any detail or details that mislead the viewer as to where it was taken. In this case, the photo actually was taken in Wisconsin. It was taken of a refurbishment, like spray painting facility in Hartford, Wisconsin, where they had these stacks of mailboxes in this industrial lot. And the photo and the way it was presented suggested that these were mailboxes that were getting torn out of the ground, supposedly by the Trump administration, to suppress mail-in ballots, which, of course, was not true. That was actually a fairly easily debunked piece of visual misinformation. But, you know, when the cat's out of the bag, it's really hard to get the cat back in the bag. that one really took off.
And, Margo, this is a theme I'm seeing elsewhere. Somebody filmed a picture of themselves burning what turned out to be sample ballots. Somebody threw a caption on it saying it was a poll worker burning filled out ballots. There was a picture of somebody, a news camera person, carrying in their digital equipment in a cart, and people captioned it, this is somebody smuggling in ballots or tampering equipment or something like that. I keep hearing about deep fakes and these really sophisticated things. These really unsophisticated things really take off, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and what you have is there's just this, let's remember, there's an information vacuum right now, and misinformation and disinformation, it absolutely thrives in this environment. And what I mean by that is that we are not used to waiting. We like our news fast and quick, and we like to get it from a 24-hour news station or from social media. And what we have is a record number, more than 60 million mail-in ballots that have to be counted, right? Because we're voting in the middle of a pandemic that's killed 235,000 Americans. So what we have is this waiting game, waiting for these ballots to be processed. And we don't like waiting in the United States, not for our news and not for our information. So what we have are these people who are trying to find answers, and they're finding it through these lies that are spreading. The one you mentioned, the Michigan, the Detroit ABC affiliate who had some gear in a wagon, and then all of a sudden it took off as this, you know, somebody said it was ballots that were being carted in. I mean, these are spreading on social media, and they are, I mean, it's something to be said that these are only happening in, you know, in these battleground states. And, you know, question what you're seeing. If you're seeing it on Facebook, if you're seeing it on social media, I would point right to the source. And that's my advice for your listeners right now is it a reputable news source? We've got to go back to this source judgment and recognizing reputable news sources. But of course, you've had an administration that's worked for 4 years to delegitimize the mainstream press. And this is one of the reasons why.
And we heard from Scott in Menominee, who couldn't stay on the line, but wondering, Scott says, about different media technology. He doesn't think AM radio is as common anymore. What other media avenues are people plugged into that can produce this misinformation? As Howard, as you watch stories like the ones we've talked about spread, what are the most common venues?
Well, the most common venue by far is Facebook. There's just no way around it. To a far lesser extent, Twitter. Twitter has its problems as well, but honestly, they've been pretty good about pulling stuff down like fairly quickly, especially during this specific election period. But Facebook is the number one offender. They have a long way to go, in my opinion, in terms of policing their own platform. And that's where we see the vast majority of the mis- and disinformation proliferate here in Wisconsin.
We are talking to Howard Hardy of Wisconsin Watch and Margo Suska of American University, looking at misinformation spreading following the election here in Wisconsin and around the nation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about fact-checking this misinformation? Are you seeing some of the stories we've talked about pop up on your Facebook page or your Twitter feed or conversations with friends and loved ones? How should the media, how should social media platforms handle these kind of things? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about falsehoods spreading about the election here in Wisconsin and around the country. Our guests are Wisconsin Watch elections reporter Howard Hardy, and Margo Suska is assistant professor of journalism at American University. She also works with Poynter's International Fact Check Network. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about some of the misinformation you've seen, how it spreads, maybe how to stop it? Have you gotten stuff that turned out to be bunk even since Election Day? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Bert is with us in Stevens Point. Bert, hello.
Hello. I know this sounds really simple, but I think honesty is really the biggest problem we have here. And how can we keep our politicians honest? I mean, I believe there's European countries that actually have laws to keep politicians honest. And I believe as soon as they're elected, they no longer have the freedom of speech where they can just lie.
Bert, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting question. Margo, I think there's a general perception that we can't always trust what politicians say. Is there a way to regulate that? Or short of that, how do you see the role of the media in holding politicians accountable when they do lie?
Well, I mean, I think that's what the media is designed to do. That's why the news media is referred to as the fourth estate. You know, a check on the other branches of government meant to hold government officials accountable through investigative reporting, through attending meetings, making sure that their votes and what they say are on the record. So I would encourage your listener to support groups like Wisconsin Watch, to support Wisconsin Public Media, because there are news organizations working, investigative reporters working every day to make sure that politicians are held accountable for the things that they said. We need a robust news media system in this country. And, you know, you and I have talked before that local news is unfortunately being decimated in this country. And that is my overarching concern, is that you're going to have politicians that are able to speak directly to the public unfiltered, without the role of the news media there to be a watchdog. And that is a troubling scenario moving ahead. So I would encourage your caller to support news media.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bert. Howard, can you talk about the role that you try to play in doing that at Wisconsin Watch? I mean, on one hand, you want to be out there positively reporting real stuff, but you've got this role of trying to debunk the false stuff. How do you strike that balance?
Yeah, that's always kind of a fine line to walk between producing this public service journalism that attempts to get the truth out there and also correct lies and intentional disinformation, and actually unintentionally amplifying those messages with your story itself. So we always want to have some clear demonstration of harm before we jump into one of those stories. Also say that the corrective pieces always have a modest impact relative to the lies themselves. Like, I wrote my debunk piece about the more votes than voters narrative as quickly as I could. But all of our stories at Wisconsin Watch go through a serious fact-checking process that can only go so fast. So by the time we published the story, several hours had gone by and quite a bit of damage had already been done. The misleading message had been shared many, many thousands of times over. So that's an ongoing problem. It's just like the relatively small reach of our corrective stories compared with the problematic content itself.
And that's, Margot, before we go back to our callers, there's an uneven playing field. When there's, as you say, a news story that's kind of stalled, we're waiting for results. A reporter like Howard is trying to carefully fact check the story before it goes out. Whereas if I want to make something up, I don't need an editor to double check it. I type and send and go. How can the media and fact checkers account for that imbalance?
Well, I mean, I think, again, it goes to your source selection. And I think that, you know, the Wisconsin, the voting claim that we were just talking about, the BBC, so the British Broadcasting Company chose that as one of their top five myths that had to be debunked about the American election. So this has made its way now overseas. I think that, you know, there needs to be an element of media literacy. I think it has to come back to an understanding of both the technological as well as the processes that go into news production. And I think it should be required in every elementary school curriculum, to be honest with you, especially as Facebook takes on this outsized role in so many of our lives and our information diets. We've got to explain the processes by which these platforms work and the way our news system works. And I just don't think there is a fundamental understanding anymore about how these processes operate in American society.
Talking about misinformation after the election with Margot Suska from American University, journalism prof there, and Howard Hardy, elections integrity reporter for Wisconsin Watch. Let's bring on another caller now. Reed with us in Whitehall. Reed, hi.
Hi. I just a comment. I guess with the for-profit media that we have in the U.S., I don't see that it hurts the media at all to prolong this election. I do support public news and public radio. I think it's a truer news source. I don't see how they could be hurting at this point with the election being drawn out.
Reed, thanks. Thanks a lot for the call. Reed, concerned about the profit motive, Margot, at for-profit stations and maybe affecting the way they cover things. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I'm actually writing a book about for-profit media, so hopefully I'll be back on in 12 to 15 months to talk about some of those findings. But I would agree. I mean, other than a few exhausted reporters who have been working for, you know, 4 or 5 days straight, this is likely good news for news media companies, for for-profit news media companies. I hope it's good news for nonprofits, which I support. But yeah, hitting that refresh button every 30 minutes, or in my case, every 3 minutes on the New York Times website, you know, is certainly driving a lot of traffic. So, but I would argue even against myself, and just to put it into perspective for your caller, which is to say the news media is also, I mean, reporters and editors and producers, we're also a part of the citizen group in the United States. And I think we want resolution as much as, you know, I hope as much as they want to generate ad revenue.
Howard, at a nonprofit group yourself, Wisconsin Watch, can you talk about your methods? When you're looking for things to debunk, how do you find them? Do you just kind of have the net open and they come to you, or do you have to seek these stories out?
I do a lot of digging through social media. It really, when I say that I'm tracking mis and disinformation online, I think a lot of people think it's a little more glamorous than it is. I do have some pretty complex dashboards set up where I can save my searches and just scroll through. But it really just comes down to a lot of scrolling and staring and trying to understand what I'm seeing.
Margot, I guess we keep touching tangentially on Facebook. Let's tackle it head on. What do you think the role of not a company like Facebook. Facebook itself should be in trying to stop the flow of potentially harmful misinformation.
I mean, listen, Facebook is as powerful today. I mean, if you look at its revenue as some nation states in the world today, and it has got to do more. It is, and I don't think that that is censorship. I think that that is an obligation. And perhaps that is with partnerships with local news organizations. Maybe there's more opportunity for a local news network or local station partnerships with Facebook. But there certainly Facebook has got to open itself up to more of these, you know, more of these criticisms of what it's allowing to be disseminated. And it's got to open its wallet to find some solutions. And I assure all of your listeners that it's got the money to be able to take some time to make some solutions that we could all benefit from.
And briefly, Howard, is Facebook the main channel where a little change there can make a big difference in the flow of misinformation?
Absolutely. I mean, they're the main platform where so many of these rumors and hoaxes and hyperpartisan pieces of content are generated and then spread from. I think they have a huge responsibility to better police their platform. And I'm particularly concerned with the hesitancy on Facebook's part to fact check the ads, the political ads that are on their platform. We've seen a lot of misleading pieces of misinformation slip through the cracks when the content is paid for.
We'll leave it there, Howard. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And Margo, thanks for being with us again.
Okay, thanks so much.
We've been talking to Margo Suska, assistant professor of journalism at American University and an assessor with Poynter's International Fact Check Network, and Howard Hardy, also with us, elections integrity reporter for Wisconsin Watch. They join us to talk about fact-checking misinformation in an election week.